Good
Blog
evening.
Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Queen Talk. Hallelujah. I am your host, Pastor Constance Whitehurst, and I thank you for tuning in. I thank you for tuning in tonight to our Queen Talk blogcast. Queen Talk is a program, praise God, that is for women and by women, in which we discuss 21st century women's issues from a biblical perspective. So I thank you for tuning in tonight. We have a guest tonight. Her name is Lieutenant Kimberly McClinton. And Lieutenant McClinton, she is a police officer and a police lieutenant from the Georgia State University Police Department. She has agreed to come and speak with us from the topic of mental health and de-escalation. For those of you that are familiar with Queen Talk, we did a Call to the Queen Women's Conference in 2021, and Lieutenant McClinton was one of our guests. And so we welcome her back tonight to be able to talk with you on this very a vital topic. And so I encourage everyone to grab your pens and papers because and take notes, because one of our goals is to be able to help, again, to educate and edify those women that tune in, again, on topics that are very relevant for our 21st century lifestyle. I'm going to give you just a bit of a bio regarding Lieutenant Kimberly McClinton. She is very experienced, well-read, very knowledgeable. She and I had the opportunity to meet when we both worked at Georgia Perimeter College, now Georgia State. And I just thank God for her because she is doing so much for the community regarding mental health, crisis intervention, and such topics. So Kimberly McClinton is a native of Brooklyn, New York, and currently resides in Decatur, Georgia, with her husband, Quavis McClinton. Kimberly holds a bachelor's degree in criminal justice and a dual master's degree and criminology and critical incident management, both obtained from St. Leo University. She is currently a student, or actually she has graduated at this point from Columbus State University, where she at that time was attending the prestigious Command College program for law enforcement. Kimberly began her career in law enforcement over 28 years ago, shortly after relocating to the state of Georgia in 1991. Kimberly McClinton is the proud mother of two adult children, her son Jane and her daughter Brielle. She developed an interest in mental health and related issues in her early childhood. Her late mother, Georgia, worked tirelessly within the community and for the state of New York with the developmentally disabled children and adult populations. Her mom provided her and her siblings with a great example and inspiration as she consistently demonstrated through her work her compassion and empathy for those living with mental illness. In 2007, she attended a week-long crisis intervention team training course at Fulton County Police Academy. This class helped to increase her understanding of the important lessons her mother instilled in her for those living with mental illness. In 2010, she was selected to go to Columbus State University to become a state-certified CIT instructor. Kimberly has extensive experience, knowledge, and ongoing training in the area of law enforcement. In 2008, she was promoted to the rank of sergeant, and in 2011, she was promoted to her current rank of lieutenant. She is a certified Georgia Post instructor for law enforcement and holds over 10 levels of law enforcement post certifications. There's probably more at this point. In June of 2019, Kimberly successfully completed the National Certification Instructor course for Mental Health First Aid. With both state and national certifications, she currently serves as the mental health instructor, CIT or crisis intervention trainer, peer support coordinator, and honor guard member for the Georgia State University Police Department. Georgia State University Police Department is currently at a 98% CIT training rate. Her goal is to continue to provide resources, bring awareness, and education demonstrated through her work with law enforcement and the surrounding communities she serves. Moreover, she serves as a catalyst for positive change in the transformational law enforcement response to all citizens, as well as those living with mental illness. Well, Queen Talk audience, I present to some and introduce to others tonight our special guest, Lieutenant Kimberly McClinton. And I'm going to go ahead at this point and bring her into our studio. Lieutenant McClinton, hold on for me one moment. Praise God. Let's see. Can you hear me?
Yes, absolutely. I can hear you.
All right. Well, thank you again so much for gracing this microphone. We thank God for you and thank God for the knowledge and information that you will share with our Queen Talk audience. And at this time, I'm going to go ahead and turn the mic over to you.
Well, thank you, Constance, for that lovely introduction. I appreciate that. And I would like to say good evening to all the ladies that are on the line this evening. I hope, I trust and hope all is well with you and your families. And we're going to get right into verbal de-escalation and mental health. It is a very broad topic, a very complex topic. It can be very difficult to understand sometimes. So I want to come from the perspective of just having a very basic understanding of mental health disorders and illness and how we can tie that into de-escalation and how we should perform de-escalation, when and how and when we should not. So understanding mental health. So what is a mental health illness? A mental health disorder or illness is a diagnosable illness that affects a person's thinking, emotional state, and their behavior. And it may disrupt their ability to work or carry out their daily activities or engage in healthy, satisfying relationships. So mental health, that's a very simplistic definition of a mental health disorder or illness, and that's exactly where I want to keep it.
Yes.
Now, most of us know someone, whether it's a family member, a friend, a coworker, someone at the church. We have for the most part, come across someone that has mental illness. It is a very common disorder. We ourselves may be living with mental illness. The situation with mental illness is stigma. There's a stigma that's associated with mental health problems. And many people are not well informed. And so because of that lack of knowledge, a lot of people do not know how to respond to people that have mental illness. And oftentimes they go untreated. They don't want to get the help that they need. Professional help may not always be available or on hand or affordable. And people live with mental illness in silence because they don't want to be mistreated. They don't want to be treated differently. So one of the goals of mental health training and mental health understanding is that we need to reduce that stigma, because that stigma motivates us to fear, rejection, and avoidance of trying to get the help that we need. And so those that have mental illness, with the utmost dignity and respect, because that's what we would want if we were suffering. And anybody, you, me, anybody could end up having a mental health breakdown or crisis at any given time, whether you're diagnosed or undiagnosed.
So true.
Do we have any questions?
Not at this point.
All right. I'm going to keep going. So understanding what de-escalation is. So really, what is de-escalation? I'm sure you've heard that term quite a bit. De-escalation really is using your words to reduce the intensity of a situation. And that sometimes can be more challenging than it sounds. De-escalation does not work at 100%. Sometimes it works, sometimes it don't, but it is definitely, definitely needed. And why do we need it? We need it to increase our own personal safety, the safety of the person in crisis and your surrounding community. We need it because those cameras are always rolling and somebody's always saying, well, you know, this person did this or they did that. And when you engage in de-escalation, when you can, and we're going to talk a little bit more about when you can do it and when you can't, really reduces your personal liability and perhaps the people you work with, because we don't know when a situation is going to happen. A crisis situation can occur anywhere, at work. You could be at the grocery store. You could be at church. You could be at home. Your children may be involved in it. All you got to do is turn that news on. And when you turn that news on, you're like, wow, you know, this is really getting out of hand, because we are. And I'm sure everybody has a basic knowledge of this, is that we are living in the aftermath of the pandemic. And we're seeing a lot of cases where people are really just having mental crisis. They're having mental breakdowns. They're having them everywhere, at home, at work, in the community. And so now more than ever, de-escalation techniques, verbal de-escalation techniques, are so important for your own personal safety.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So how do you successfully de-escalate someone? So let me say this. Police de-escalation and citizen de-escalation is two different things. But universal de-escalation, successful de-escalation for anyone, is a few requirements that you should have. You should have the ability to be a team player. You're going to have good listening skills. You need to demonstrate empathy and understanding. and you need to be able to demonstrate problem-solving skills. You have to have the capacity to remain calm and in control. And that is sometimes easier said than done when you have someone that is standing in front of you and they are in a full-blown crisis. It is not, it's easy to talk about it. It's easy to say, well, I would do this or I would do that. Why did that person do this? Well, when someone gets in your face and they are in a mental crisis and they're spitting and they're trying to hit you and they're doing all of that, that's when the escalation becomes real. But the number one thing that we're never going to do, whether we're a police officer, a citizen, a child, we're never going to jeopardize our safety, ever. You are never going to jeopardize your safety. If it is not safe, you cannot de-escalate anyone because your safety is number one. And I really want folks to understand that. You have to learn how to listen. That listening skills are critical when someone's in a crisis. You have to do your best to block out distractions because when someone's in crisis, there's going to be, life is going to continue. There's going to be distractions around you. There may be noise depending on the location. If you're at work, you're going to do your best to block out those distractions. And you always have to be sincere and genuine while you're trying to understand what the situation is, while that situation is unfolding, on top of remaining calm and in control. Because you can't control the behavior of the person in crisis, but you're going to have to be able to control your response to their behavior. And trust me, I have spent many, many, many years learning how to do that. One of the things about de-escalation is that your words, they have power. And a lot of times, we don't understand how much power our words have. You have to be very cognizant of how important and how much weight your words carry, depending on who you're talking to. But always remember, everybody wants to be treated with respect and dignity. If I'm talking to a homeless person or the president of the university, I give them the same amount of respect. When I go to work, I show up in de-escalation mode because I don't know what's going to happen that day. I just show up. I'm open to it. Yes, I am trained in it, and I do very well in it. But I'll tell you one thing: there have been times when it didn't work for me. So, no matter how much you train, no matter how empathetic you are, how great your listening skills are, there's going to be times where you have to disengage, and you have to know when to disengage. And when do you disengage? You disengage from trying to calm a person down when it's no longer safe or when it's not working, you know, and you have to have a lot of patience. I've been on calls where I've had to be with someone for 2 hours, 4 hours, which may seem like an eternity, and it is a very long time to be in a situation with a person in crisis. But the difference between me as a police officer and you as a citizen is that you can disengage, because people that work in all walks of life, they could be a customer service person, they could work at a fast food joint, they may work at the Quick Trip, you know, they may work at Macy's. They're training their people in de-escalation. But there's a time when there has to be a cutoff. If it's not working, you have the option as a citizen to say, this is not working, I'm going to go and get some help. You have to know when. You'll know by knowing yourself, you have to know when to say, okay, I'm going to call the police. I'm going to call security because this is you know, escalating and it's not working. And see, that's the difference between a citizen de-escalating and an officer de-escalating. As an officer, it's critical that we have these skills because we cannot disengage. We can't walk away once you call us into a situation. We have to take care of it. We have to handle it. And that's the difference between us coming to a scene and you saying, okay, I'm done. We can't do that. So it is very important for you to understand that and also understand the difference between someone that is having an emotional response. They may not necessarily be mentally ill. They may just be having an emotional response to some bad news, just situational, a situation where they have become emotionally disturbed, and they are just, it looks like they have mental illness, but actually they've gotten some really, really bad news, or they've gotten a death notification or anything, and it looks like that, you know, it looks like they could be mentally ill. It will actually mimic mental illness when you have an emotional breakdown. Or they could be going through a divorce and they could be at, that's the last straw of that situation. So you have to approach people in a non-judgmental way when they're in crisis. Because when they're in crisis, you know, you may, if you're coming up on the situation judging them, then it may not go well because you're thinking one thing and it's going to be a whole nother situation. I had to learn that a long time ago. Leave your judgment in your back pocket. When you're dealing with folks that are in crisis, it is nothing to play with because you want to make sure that you're safe, they're safe. That's the whole goal. The main goal of verbal de-escalation is to gain compliant, voluntary compliance from the person that's in crisis. In other words, if you want them to walk two blocks with you, you want to be able to talk them into doing that. If you want them to turn the corner and go left and then go right, then you're winning. You're winning now because now you got them in a place to where you can say, okay, we're going to go get you some help. And they're able to hear you, listen, and focus on what you're saying so that you can get them some help. Do we have any questions, comments, or concerns, or anything you want to talk about as far as what I've already talked about?
Well, for right now, Kim, I have a question. You said something. You said that we must recognize the difference between mental illness or an emotional breakdown. From a lay person standpoint, what are some of the indications that we need to know to be able to determine the difference, as you said, between true mental illness and someone just having an emotional breakdown?
All right, Constance. Well, that will come from you understanding and recognizing the signs and symptoms of a mental illness. So we talked earlier, I mentioned an emotionally disturbed person. There's a disturbance in their normal mental functioning that has caused them a great deal of stress. They may or may not have a mental illness, but it is important to recognize that, look for that difference. Someone with mental illness, you have to be able to recognize what mental illness looks like. You know, someone that is depressed, they're going to show you they may not be eating. Their grooming may be off. They may not show up to work. There's going to be a disruption in their life. So when you begin to understand what mental health disorders are, recognizing the signs and symptoms, and that doesn't mean that you're going to be, you're on the level of a doctor. It's just recognizing those signs. If you work with someone, I'll give you an example. if your coworker comes to work and you know her to be upbeat, the life of the party, she's always bubbly, and, you know, the last couple of weeks coming in, she's not properly groomed, her hair is not done, she's tired, she's not sleeping, that's when you say, you know, something's going on. And for the most part, most of us, we can see that kind of, we can see those kind of signs easily on a coworker, a loved one. So you take that same skill set when you out on the street, or you at the grocery store, or you out in the community, and you notice a person, and you can, sometimes you can look at a person and say, that person is having a problem. And you need to be situationally aware of that, not hyper-vigilant or scared, but you need to be aware for your own safety. Okay, something's not right here. You don't need all the facts. You don't need to diagnose anybody. You just need to have that awareness. And that's what this is about. So I hope that answers your question.
Yes, actually it does, and it certainly enlightened even on the other question that I had regarding how do you recognize the symptoms of mental illness for those that have not been diagnosed, because you do have many people that suffer from the symptoms and suffer from mental illness, and again, as you shared, because of the stigma associated with it, they may have not been diagnosed. So again, as you shared, being situationally aware, you know, some people also call it using your gut instinct. When you're approached or when you're in the presence of someone, as you shared and gave the scenario, such as the lady that would be at work, that you just notice, okay, this is something that's a little different or something that's been going on with this person that's outside of their normal realm of behavior. So, yes, thank you for sharing that. Go ahead with the remaining present part of your presentation. And then we're going to open up the lines for questions. And I have a few more questions as well.
Okay. Another very big part of verbal de-escalation, first of all, this is a very basic level. We have in law enforcement, we go up to intermediate, advanced. So this is a very in-depth course, but we're having a conversation right now. So I want you to understand, I want the audience to understand that I've gotten to this point with years of training experience and just really being engulfed in all of this and dealing with folks on all different kind of levels. But one of the things that is so important is that we understand what is known as the 93-7 rule. That means that 93% of communication occurs through nonverbal behavior and tone. The other 7% takes place through the use of words. So here's what I'm saying. You got nonverbal is 55%. You got the person's tone of voice is 38%. And then you got the actual words that someone's going to speak at 7%. What does that tell us? That tells us that body language is the language that we speak. You could look at somebody, and I don't know if you ever had an experience where you see a person that you've never seen before, and you can tell what's going on based on their body language, and they've never spoken a word. You can tell a lot from the person's tone of voice. So
yes.
This is a two-way street. So when you approach a person in crisis, and this may not be what you planned on doing with your day if you're not a police officer, because we live this. But if you're not in law enforcement and you find yourself in a situation where you're like, you know what, I need to do all I can to try to be safe myself and for the safety of other people. safety, my safety first. This is going to come into play. You do not have to be an expert to read body language. It is something that we all do. It's just part of being human, and tone of voice. You know, by a person's tone of voice, it gives meaning to what they're saying. So, and the words that they're going to say at 7%, basically the body language is going to tell you a lot before they even say anything to you. So this is so important that we understand how much body language is just an integral part of de-escalation. And it's a two-way street. You have to watch your body language, because if that person is in crisis and you're coming at them a certain way, they can feel that energy. You know, I'll give you an example. As a police officer, if I approach a person who's in crisis and I'm leaning on my gun, I've seen officers do it, and I'm asking this person, what's going on? You know, what's happening? My tone of voice is not right. I'm talking and I'm giving them verbal commands. It's going to escalate. I'm not going to de-escalate. I'm going to escalate that situation. Because when someone's in crisis, they don't care my title. They don't care that I'm a police officer. They don't care. They're in crisis. They don't care who you think you might be. You might be the president of the company. They don't care. You might be a VIP, you know, on the third floor of your building, but right there with that person in crisis, none of that matters. You have to, you know, say if I would demonstrate that to you from this platform, I would say something like, to a person in crisis, I'm going to soften my tone. I'm going to lower my voice. And this is universal. This works with everybody, children, men, older people. It just works with everybody. It's a universal way to de-escalate a situation. And you would say something like, you know, I can see that you're having trouble today. What's your name? And you know, they give you their name. Sometimes they will, sometimes they won't. And then you may say, you know, I'm here to help. How can I help you? You know, you want to talk, can you tell me more about what's going on with you? And they may be cussing and fussing, and trust me, I've been in some really, really bad situations with those in crisis. Never, ever take it personal. They will call you names. They may spit at you. Once again, that cuts into safety. They may try to attack you. That's safety. Or they may not do any of those things. They may just be crying and crying and crying. And I know that the audience I'm talking to has dealt with this on some level, whether it's at home, at work, at school. I know it has happened all around me, at church. And, yeah. You know, what do? You know, so those are the universal things that you're going to do. You're going to really, really care about that person. You want to care enough to get them the help that they need. You are not trying to diagnose them. You are not trying to fix them. That is not why you are there. You are a listening ear, and you are trying to figure out how can I get this person the help that they need, stabilize them enough to get them to the next person that can help them. So when you're in de-escalation mode with someone, when it's successful, I absolutely love it, because I watch that person coming down based on my action. I will watch them. They're literally calming down. Once I get them to where I want them as far as being calm, I may ask them to breathe. I'll say something like, can you do me a favor and just breathe? They'll start breathing. Now, I will tell you this. When you are dealing with this type of situation, breathing, not only for the person in crisis, is good for you, and it's good for the person in crisis, because it resets the brain, because you're having a reaction to all of this as well. So that's why I say it's not easy. You know, a lot of people, they run the other way. And I don't blame them. If you don't have the skill set and you can't remain calm, because everybody can't do this. But there will be times in life, there may be a time in life where you have no choice. And I would rather know how to do something than nothing. So you have to have patience. If you was trying to get to work at 8:30 and you ran into a crisis situation, you're going to be late. You know, if you're out in traffic with somebody who's showing road rage, you can't meet anger with anger. You absolutely cannot. I've been in road rage situations too. People get killed all the time in road rage, and we know that. Just turn the news on. And a lot of people don't even watch the news anymore because it's really sad. I mean, we had a parent just the other day. She came up to her child's school. The situation escalated where she got very, very upset. Emotionally, she was just at a 10. The parent pulled out a gun at Booker T. Washington High School. This happened three or four days ago. And the police was, put the gun down. And she started waving the gun. And at that point, they had to shoot the parent. So imagine how her child, you know, her child was horrified that the parent, his mom had to be shot. And she's going to be okay, though. I mean, she's in the hospital, but she's going to be okay. And that's what I mean by sometimes, you know, officers have to go to that next level of, you know, hey, we attempted to de-escalate. But here is what's very important with officers. We have to make that attempt. That attempt could be put the gun down. We have to at least make an attempt. That's where our training is headed now, because so many people have been killed. And but now with a citizen is not going to be doing that, because you are not trained, equipped. You don't, you know, that we don't want you to put yourself in harm's way. So it's just really a lot to it. You literally need to, I would say, to get really good at this, take some training. Get you some verbal de-escalation training and prepare yourself, because we don't control what other people do, but there are people out here having meltdowns absolutely on a regular basis. It's very common, you know, whether it's on a large scale or a small scale. You know, I had to de-escalate two parents last week at Georgia State. It is just the world we live in now. And having said that, I would say the next best thing in verbal de-escalation, once you got that person calmed down, is to be a resourceful person. And that is another great goal of de-escalation. I don't want to just talk to people. I want to be able to get you the help that you need. So when I'm teaching de-escalation, that's all part of it. You're going to have the resources that you need, because I'm sure most people are aware that we have the mental health system in the state of Georgia. It's not just in the state of Georgia. It's all across this nation. It's fragmented. It's broken, just like the prison system. And hopefully we'll get better. I don't know if you guys have been watching the news, but the law has just been passed. It's been signed. The HB, House Bill 1013, mental parity law, has just been signed into law in the state of Georgia, which is going to be critical to us getting out of the situation we're in right now, because we rank 48 and 49 in the nation. We are at the end of the we're at the bottom of, we scraping the bottom of the barrel. We're helping folks with mental illness and resources. So it's time for a change. So I want to be on the forefront of that change. I am on the forefront of that change. And I've been, you know, in the trenches for, oh gosh, for the last 20 years, I would say now, 15 years maybe, between 15 and 20 years of just, you know, ringing the alarm, sounding the alarm, just training my own self and my family and the people around me, you know, that I love. My husband, he's done had a CIT class by now, at least two of them. So, you know, and again, you know, you have to think about, okay, what if I have a mental breakdown? You would want somebody to be able to talk to you and de-escalate you. So it's really a lot to it, but I do have a ton of resources, and one of my favorite resources is the GCAL line, the Georgia Crisis and Access Line, and that is if you have a pen and paper, let me know when you're ready. I want to give you this number. It's 24/7. They will help you. I have used them all the time. These people come through. They are just amazing people. And I want to give you that number. It is 1-800-715-4225. And again, this is the Georgia Crisis and Access Line, 24/7. They help with everything from developmental disabilities, mental health, drugs, alcohol. What they do is they put you in touch with who you need to speak to.
Okay.
They are just amazing. It's free. You don't have to worry about, you know, how much, you know, is this? How, you know, do I have to pay for this? It's just an amazing resource. And I have another one. I have so many, but I wanted to pick out the ones that are really, I'm looking in my book now. the Department of, hold on 1 second. Let me make sure I get this right. The Georgia Department of Behavioral Health and Developmental Disabilities, and their acronym is DBHDD.
Repeat that, please.
Yes, ma'am. It is the Georgia Department of Behavioral Health and Developmental Disabilities, also known as the DBHDD. DBHDD. And let me just tell you a little bit about this agency. So we have 23 agencies, community service, they're known as community service boards. And there's 23 of them in the state of Georgia. And they fall down into regions. And this is one of them, the DBHDD. They have 6 different regional offices. And in the metro area, say Clayton, DeKalb, Fulton, Gwinnett, Newton, and Rockdale, they have offices here. As a matter of fact, I was just over there, I think, last week. Their headquarters is downtown Atlanta. And I would like to give you their number. When I tell you these people are absolutely amazing, they will help you and your family. They have resources. They have funding. They will just point you in the right direction if you're dealing with someone who has mental illness and you don't know which way to turn. I want you to turn to these folks, and I want to give you their number. And their number is 404-244-5050. And I'm going to repeat that number. It's 404-244-5050. And you can also go to their website. If you just type in dbhdd.georgia.gov, it'll pull up everything you need to see. You may say, well, I don't live in none of those counties that you just mentioned. Well, they have five other regions, and it's the breakdown of each county. If you live in Bartow County, that would be Region 1, for example. You know, or if you lived in Baker County, that's Region 4. So there's 159 counties in the state of Georgia, and every county is covered under these six regions. And I'm doing my best not to give you too much information, also known as TMI. I don't want to do that because I don't want to miss the message that I'm giving you. And if we could just have a brief review, it would be that your safety is first. De-escalation does not always work. It is not 100% like anything in life. It is not 100%. But the universal tips that I want you to remember, don't take none of this personal with a person in crisis. It is not about you. It is about the crisis that they're in. It has nothing to do with you. You just happen to be the person that came upon this situation. You're going to need to stay calm. You're going to need to minimize distractions. Okay, for example, if you're on your cell phone, get off of it. If you got a text message coming through, don't answer it. You need to pay attention. Lower your voice. You need to be sincere and truthful. Don't tell them, hey, if you calm down, you know, I'll take you out for a steak dinner. If you can't do that, don't tell them that. So you just want to be honest. You want to use that empathy and call for help. Call for assistance. Call for medical assistance. Call somebody to help you. And keep your personal space, yours and theirs. You know, we all know about social distancing now, so that shouldn't be a problem. But, you know, a lot of times when people are in crisis, they don't want to be touched. If you need to touch, lay hands on somebody, you need to ask them, is it okay if I touch your shoulder? Is it okay if I pray with you if the situation calls for that? Let's say if you're in church, you know, a person in crisis, they may not want to pray at that time. It's not that they don't love the Lord. They're just in a crisis. So you just have to have that discernment, and you just have to have that patience. And most of all, your safety is number one. So at this time, I'm going to ask if anyone has questions. I don't want to take up the whole hour. I know it's already 8:48. And if there's any questions, I'll take them now.
I'm going to ask one question, Kim, specifically. You gave resources for the state of Georgia, and we thank you so much for that. We have people that are on the line from North Carolina, from California, from Virginia, is there a national hotline number that you could recommend for those that need assistance?
Yes, we do have national hotline numbers. And once again, I already gave you one. This one is the GCAL number, the Georgia Crisis and Access Line. They can connect you with other states if you call them. They can connect you with other state resources. I do have a number here. I'm looking for it. It's a national number. I have put together a whole book on resources for any situation, and I'm looking for that national number. I'll find it in a minute. But, yeah,
okay.
The GCAL number will connect you to national resources in any state.
Okay. And just to repeat, that number is 1-800-715-4225. That's the GCAL number that Lieutenant McLennan is referring to. I'm going to go ahead and open the lines up at this time because we have a few more minutes left in the broadcast. First of all, again, thank you so much, Lieutenant McClinton. This information is invaluable because, again, of the time that we're living in, we can be faced with these type of situations as you shared at any given moment. I'm going to go ahead and open the lines up. If you would simply press 1 on your dial pad, if you would like to engage in this conversation, if you have questions, we certainly would love to be able to hear from you as well as ensure that your questions are answered. So go ahead and press 1 on your dial pad. Okay, caller, your last 4 digits are 0400. Hold on for me one moment, Mother Pat. It is it's spinning. Can you hear me, Mother? Go right ahead. You should be in the studio now. Go right ahead.
Yes, ma'am, I do hear you. And thank McClendon. I'm trying to think of position.
Yes.
But anyway, yes. It was very informative. And I like what you had said about universal tone you use. And of course, with me being the way I am, the first thing came to my mind is a soft answer, turn away wrath. And that is so true, because if I elevate my voice level, then of course that other person is going to elevate theirs, and it can get very nasty. And you kind of answered the question, because I was about to ask about the touching, you know, because sometimes a person has gone through a crisis, they may want to hold your hand. So I was wondering, I said, now, is that, would that be safe? Would that be a good move or whatnot? Because I'm thinking about keeping a safe distance, you know. I'm wondering about that. Is there some method or some rule of a distance between you and the person that's gone through the crisis?
Okay, that's a great question. That's a great question, Mother Pat. Okay, so as far as it goes to holding someone's hand, if they reach out for your hand, I successfully de-escalated a person that was about to jump off a bridge a couple of years ago, and they took my hand and I pulled them to safety. So every situation is going to be different. It's going to require what I know that God has equipped you with, which is that wisdom, that discernment, and that basic instinct. So if the situation warrants it, where you can touch that person's hand and you don't feel like your safety's in jeopardy, then you go right ahead. If that is going to help them de-escalate, that's perfect. But when you want to do it, if they do it and it's safe for them to do it and they're not threatening your safety, that's fine. But when you want to do it, because some of us are touchy-feely, you know, some of us, you know, we just want to reach out and touch people because that's just our way. You need to ask, is it okay for me to pray with you and take your hand? And if they say, no, I don't want to do that right now, or they might say yes. But the main thing is that you act when you're the one that want to touch them. If they want to touch you and you feel comfortable with them touching you, that's okay. But if you don't, then they don't need to touch you either, and you maintain your tone. Because even though, like you were saying earlier, you have a, you can escalate your tone up, you have a big voice, it's still very sweet, though. You know, you can have a big voice that's got a sweet tone to it. My mother had a loud voice. She had a sweet tone in her voice when she wasn't upset. So, yeah, you know, as long as you maintain in safety and you know, that person is calming down, you're just fine. But what you don't want to do is touch someone who does not want to be touched, because their body language is going to speak to you anyway. They're going to pull away from you. You know, going back to what I was saying earlier, that the body language is 55% of communication. So 7% is going to be the word, And then the other 38% is going to be that your tone of voice. So you'll know when somebody want to be touched. You'll know when they want to touch you. You'll know. You will know. I hope that answers your question.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Thank you, Mother Pat, for that question. We have another caller. Caller, your last four digits are 4294. 4294. Just one moment, please. Go right ahead.
Hey, good evening. This is Minister Gretchen. God bless you both.
Minister.
Thank you for this message. And appreciate you, Officer McClinton.
Oh, thank you.
I would just have some questions concerning vets, military vets. I'm a military vet, and I know you know as a peace officer, we make up a large percentage of those that have PTSD and traumatic brain injuries in our society, and sometimes they're not wanting to or unable to speak, but you can tell it's a escalating situation going on, maybe someone sitting with a weapon or they threatened someone else's safety or their own safety, but then they stop talking. What would you recommend in those times when you're unable to get a communication started with them, but you know there is a serious situation brewing?
I've dealt with veterans in crisis, and you're absolutely right about the presence of weapons, and the same thing with police officers. A lot of police officers are military veterans. You're going to remain calm. You're going to be veterans. We need to be aware of their personal space, and we do need to assess for weapons. If they have a weapon, and evaluate that stress level. And also, too, if you're a veteran and that person's a veteran, then you're in a unique position, if your safety is not in jeopardy, to help that veteran, because it's like peer support. You're going to be able to understand where that person is coming from. When I'm out with a veteran, I ask them what branch of the service they were in. I try to make a connection with that veteran and ask them, well, what did you, you know, you served in the Army. Okay. How many years, you know, I'm talking because when you're talking to a person and they're listening, you're de-escalating them. And I might thank that person for their service, you know, thank you for serving our country. And that usually goes over pretty well. And now, you know, you're opening up a dialogue. If it is safe, then you continue to work with that person and really make access to the Veterans Administration for resources. That is going to be, whether they discharged or not, it don't matter. They're going to see about a veteran at the Veterans Hospital. And I know a lot of people have had bad experiences at the Veterans Administration, but there are resources there. I know, because I've worked a lot with those organizations, the hospitals, and you just have to sit with the right people at the hospital. It's a challenge in today's world. It truly is, but you got to call the Veterans Hospital. And I'm sure, do you have those numbers?
Yes, ma'am. We have access to those numbers. We're in the system. Both me and my husband are veterans.
Okay. So you just, you know, you want to use the universal precautions of remaining calm, lower your voice, watch your tone, check your body language, check their body language, you know, assess for weapons. You're going to be assessing and evaluating, calling for help. If you know a veteran that's in trouble, whether they're speaking or not, you're going to know based on that body language. Call and get them some help. That's what I would do. Yeah, you call on your resources and you find somebody at that big hospital to help you. That's what you do.
That's
I got the money in crisis, and this is what I need.
And this is what I need.
Yes, this is what I need. He's a veteran, and you give him the information. It is their obligation and their duty to help you.
Yes, ma'am.
That's what I would do with a veteran.
And this is one of my final questions. Are there responses of things you can and cannot say? I know sometimes people are real touchy. So is there something you can tell us that something like maybe you should or we should never ever say when someone is in a crisis that we should, like they say, don't go there? I mean, it's something that's like, if you can't do anything else, please don't do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're not going to be judging what they can and cannot do. Everybody, including you and I, have a right to our feelings. So that is not part of the escalation to judge the situation. Your main goal is to get that person calm, get the resources they need, and get the help that they need. So you're going to be doing, you're going to be listening. So let's say, for example, they say, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do. My family don't want me here no more. They just tired of me, and they sick and tired of me, and I don't have nowhere to live. Your job is not to judge the situation about the family or him. You should be saying something like this. I understand that you don't have anywhere to go. You know, I want to help you with that. And then they're going to look at you. I'm telling you because I do this. I live this stuff. They're going to look at you and they're going to say, oh, she's listening. She's listening to me. You're going to paraphrase and summarize what they just said. And then you can say something like, tell me more. And they will. So that's part of verbal de-escalation, wrapping the right language around it, the right tone. Yeah, you're never going to whatever they're telling you about is not for you to judge. You know, I've heard all kind of, and my job is to gain voluntary compliance. I might want to get, my goal might be to get you to Grady. If I can get you to Grady and you just told me some really outlandish stuff, it doesn't matter. My goal is to get you to the hospital to get help. So remember what the goal of de-escalation is, to get them, to calm them down as much as you possibly can and to get them the help that they need. And that's the goal. You have, the mission is accomplished if you can do that.
Very good. Thank you so much for your consideration and answers. I appreciate you.
Oh, you're welcome.
All right. Thank you, Minister Gretchen, for posing those questions. And again, Lieutenant McClendon, we thank you so much. We are right at a little over, a little past 9 o'clock. I want to make sure to give everyone an opportunity. If you have any, right now I'm not showing any additional questions, but if you do have a question and would like to chime in, we'll give a few more minutes. Just press 1 on your dial pad because we want to make sure to try and get everyone's question answered. And as we are doing that, to Gretchen, one of the things that Lieutenant McClinton and I also discussed is sometimes it's very good to do in de-escalation is, and she shared this earlier, try to get and use the person's name. It's something about when you are talking in a situation that you're trying to de-escalate, when you care enough to get that person's name and use their name, sometimes that's one of the first steps as well in the de-escalation process.
And I absolutely agree with that. One of the things that I always do when I'm de-escalating someone, or whether they're suicidal or they're on drugs, or it doesn't matter. What I do is I ask them their name, because I want to make my goal in that situation, besides helping you stay safe and all the other stuff we talked about, is to get you the help that you need. So I'm going to ask you your name. And some people will give you their name and some won't. But sometimes you can get the name later on once you develop a dialogue with that person. They may not give it to you up front. I may come back if I don't get their name first, you know, in the first 5 minutes or so, or however long it took. Once they are more calm, I'll come back and say, "Can you tell me what your name is?" I'll ask it again,
yes.
And then usually on that second go round, I'll get their name, and then and once I got your name, now I'm working on a deeper connection to get you to the help that you need. Yeah.
All right, sir. So. Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Lieutenant McClinton, for first of all just gracing us and gracing this Queen Talk line with your presence. We thank you so much again for this information, valuable, very valuable information and knowledge that you've shared with our listening audience. I know that this has been such a great benefit as well. And I just pray that as you've shared the information that it has fallen on good ground, good ears, and that those that have heard it will not only just be hearers, as we say in the biblical world, no, not just to be
mm-hmm.
hearers, but also doers only, because
doers.
This is
mm-hmm.
so valuable that it can make a difference between life and death. And so, therefore,
mm-hmm.
Again, I just thank you so much for sharing this information with our listening audience.
You are so welcome, and I want to thank you for having me. And what I'm going to do for your audience for future references, once we get together again, I want to give you one of these pocket guides. It's a community resource, and it has a ton of information in it. You can stick it right in your purse, or, you know, and, you know, whenever you need it, it's right there. And you will be able to share that information with your audience as we move forward into working to reduce the stigma and bring awareness and resources and help to those that are suffering with mental illness. So, again, I want to thank you and your audience and everyone that's listening. I just want to thank you for taking the time out of your day to be here with us right now. Thank you, and God bless.
Yes, and God bless. Before we end, if there is someone that would like to get in contact with you, maybe a question came up even after this program, how would they go about doing that?
You can reach me at, I'll give you my cell phone number. I'm always on the move doing something. So the best way to reach me would be by cell. And that's going to be 470-786-9416.
All right. And again, that's 470-786-9416. All right. Well, thank
yeah.
you again. And thanks to everyone that has tuned in tonight. We host our Queen Talk program again every first Thursday of the month. So we look forward to you tuning back in for the month of May. We will be sending, and I will be sending out some information on our upcoming program. And again, I pray that you go forth and have a wonderful week. Use this information to be able to make a difference in someone else's life. God bless you all and have a wonderful evening. Thank you, Officer McClinton. God bless.
God bless. Thank you, everybody.
Good night.
Chosen generation, we've been called for to show His excellence. Hey, all I require for life, God has given me, and I know who I am.
given me, for I know who I am. I know who God says I am, what he says I am, where he says I'm at. I know who I am. I know who God says I am, what he says I am, where he says I'm at. I know who I am. I'm working in power. I work in miracles. I live a life of favor. We've been called for to show these excellence.